Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thanks again for joining us. This week, we're joined by Aaron Crown. He is the creator of the website, the Mortgage Lender Implodometer, as well as other related sites. And on that site, it says, Tracking the Housing Finance Breakdown, a saga of corruption, stupidity, and government complicity. Aaron, welcome back.
Hi.
Aaron, we've been assured that the subprime mess is contained and it won't spill over into the general economy. Do you buy that?
I'd say too late.
It's too late?
Well, one of the signs, actually, that you can really see it out there on the street, since spring of 2006, a new kind of foliage that has sprung up around my neighborhood in Atlanta was the for sale sign. It's been worse than kudzu. So that told me that the market changed, and there was definitely some. I mean, I still have memories of the early 90s housing recession, and we had one of those for sale plants in our front yard for a few years. So I know that has wider ramifications for the economy. There was a furniture store that had just opened up near me, kind of a boutique regional chain, and it shut down within a few months. It was probably the worst timing in history for opening a furniture store. But the claim was that because of a billing glitch that they had gone out of business, and I just didn't buy that. I mean, if the market is going up, then you have enough leeway. There's enough cash coming in that you can kind of withstand events like that. So I think the real cause was that the home equity cash out machine had gone into reverse, and people just couldn't buy furniture like they were.
Well, in California, they've been building these large boxes of commercial space, and in one area, it's filled completely with furniture stores, and these are large buildings. And the first one just went vacant, and they're going to have a lot of vacant square footage out there, I have a feeling.
Yeah, I wonder what they're going to put out there.
Probably not a thing. And we just auctioned our commercial building and have decided to rent for a while. And I think it's going to – that's kind of one of the reasons I asked you about the unemployment that this created. When you create unemployment of, say, 50 to 200,000 people and all of that, you also have vacancies in commercial space.
Right.
I don't think the commercial world is very worried, but I don't think that's a reasonable conclusion.
No.
I think they should be.
No, I've looked at the historical data, and the commercial market generally follows the residential with a 1 to 2 year lag. This is a consumer-powered economy. 70% of the economy is said to be powered by consumer spending, so they're not going to get off. The economy is not going to get off scot-free with this one. You guys have seen all the charts. I've seen them in your materials. The home equity cash out is a significant percentage of the economy in the past few years. Job creation in this recovery since the 2001 recession has been pretty anemic, and I think that's because a lot of the structural weakness never went away after the 2001 recession. It was instead papered over by the housing bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to get to pay the piper.
You said in one of the reports that I looked at, and it was an outline, I think, that you're doing some speaking about the bubble was supported by deteriorated loan standards, which we've talked about, until we reached a point of exhaustion. What did you mean by that point of exhaustion?
Well, basically just the fundamental fact that borrowers did not have the income flows to service the debt. They're just not making enough money. And the debt has grown too big, so they just could not service it anymore. And you start to have things like job loss factor in there. And I think a lot of job loss simply is not picked up by the prevailing government statistics and things like that for some of the reasons we've discussed. But also one people tend to neglect is the deterioration of real incomes. Because of the questionability of a lot of the inflation reporting that ends up affecting our notion of or our understanding of what incomes are doing in the country, what the median income really is what it comes down to. And you know, if inflation is higher than it is said to be, then it means median incomes are lower than it is than they are understood to be, and that means people have a harder time servicing debt. So I think that that does not bode well for the extending of more debt and, you know, a longer period of lofty housing prices, and I think we have a significant correction in store for us.
Does it look like the extraction of home equity is definitely on the decline at this point?
Yeah, my understanding is the figures show that it has dramatically fallen off. And I've looked at data for past housing cycles, and what seems to happen is that the net equity extraction actually switches into reverse, and you have people kind of catching up to put money back in their homes as you head into a recession.
So you think we're in for a recession, mild or not so good, not so mild?
Yeah, I think actually that we're already in one. I think we have been for about a year. Some of the data I was looking at in your report actually backs that perspective up. You can just see certain trends that start to elbow and things that diverge, and that kind of started happening early to mid-2006. I'd have to look over what those are again, but it seems pretty clear that that the economy turn and the housing market turn. But because I think that there are those structural problems. There's the problem with Americans just not having the income to support this much debt. And that has to be flushed out of the system. That has to be corrected. The bad debt has to be written down. And we kind of have to start from scratch on a lot of this and a lot of the structure of the economy. And so I actually think it'll be a pretty severe recession.
You know, we've got up to about nearly 70% home ownership in the country, and that was up about 10% from the previous decade. I guess one of my concerns is that we've sort of, because of the loose lending policies, we've almost borrowed into the future those people that would have been ready 2 or 3 years from now to really be able to buy, and we stole them, put them into homes that now are going to cause them grief, and who are we going to be selling to is a real concern for me.
Right. Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the ownership society, but you have to do it prudently. You have to do it the right way. You have to build up the discipline for people to be able to afford assets and to be able to handle them. And with the way the market shaped up in the past few years, that's, of course, not what happened. You know, it was more a matter of a variety of facilitators handing people homes, at least temporarily, but what they were really handing them in the long term was an immense amount of debt. I mean, that's not really ownership. So, I mean, when you're just renting the home from the bank, you're pretty much just renting, but with a lot more trouble.
That's true, and it's a lot more expense because you have to fix stuff, and people don't realize. The other thing, when you have a boom, because we sold a lot of homes during the boom, people don't worry about things like it needs paint or carpet. They just want in. So they go into homes at full price or more, and then they have a bag of expenses that they really have to pay for to get the home up to very comfortable standard of living.
Right.
So that's not true in a downturn. So now you have a downturn in people that have that home, and the expectation that someone will want it in its current condition are sadly mistaken. It's got to either be priced way below market, or it has to be fixed to the perfect, or people just
And I'm intimately familiar with that. Actually, when I was looking at buying in 2005, the place actually needed a lot of work, at least 20,000 of work probably, for a condo, which was, that was a huge percentage of the overall price. And my landlord at the time wanted what the comps were getting, and the comps had many of them had that kind of work put in already. And I wasn't going to give on that, so that made me kind of the odd man out in that market. But I'm glad I did sit that out.
Yeah, he probably found someone to take your place pretty easily as far as an owner.
Well, you know, it was right at the peak, I would say. He actually didn't unload it for at least another 9 months.
Oh, and,
he had to come down in price. Yeah, he actually did have to come down. And with carrying costs, I think he would have saved money by taking my offer. But it was definitely a vivid lesson in bubble psychology.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that people don't realize, they have these credit lines, and having a big credit line, especially with nothing on it, feels very comfortable. It feels safe. You don't feel as susceptible to the downturn. But lenders in those documents have a lot of power that people have probably never bothered to read. And they can reduce those lines, or they can make them fixed and have them become an adjustable loan and not let you have access to the equity. And that, mm-hmm. that policy can be dictated to them by the people that oversee them, too. So, mm-hmm. in a market like California that's really declining in price quite a bit, we can expect that those credit lines will be reduced by the lenders eventually.
Mm.
The U.S. home has the pile of homes we have is worth about $20 trillion, and the debt against them is about $10 trillion. So we're at a 50% LTV. So what's the danger in that?
Well, the problem there, I've seen the charts from Freddie Mac and so forth. Well, first of all, it's not evenly distributed.
Not at all.
Not by far. Not enough to make a very real set of 2 to 4 million foreclosures. I mean, you have people who are fine who were already in the housing market and moving up the housing ladder, and then you have the first time borrowers and the distressed and overextended borrowers who have nothing or less than nothing. So they have no leeway. They can't really weather a valuation decline. And for a lot of them, that's past the point of no return. And the question is, what kind of emergency aid do they get? But it's not distributed evenly. But even if it was, if you look at just mean regression, the overall valuations have gone up so much that I think a wider swath of homeowners will feel the impact than is commonly thought. And one reason why that might be a problem is if you need to move for your job, and so you need to sell your place. And if you need to sell your place, and values have been going down for a few years, or market prices have been going down, then you kind of urgently need to get ahead of the market, which means you actually have to lead the market down. And so that's going to put more people in peril than is often thought. So,
absolutely, especially if they have a time frame attached to when they have to sell,
right?
Because there's so much competition. The inventory for sale has definitely exploded in California. There's a term that's used. It's called off balance sheet. What does that mean? That's an interesting comment.
Yeah, and I assume you're kind of getting at the Wall Street finance that was behind all this.
Yeah, not just that, but the government has things that they put over there as well. It's like a debt that doesn't exist somehow. I want one of those myself personally. I know that.
I know. The IRS tends to not allow regular people to use them. I wish that could apply to GAAP to my own taxes. But yeah, that factors into what we're seeing with some of these bank conduit implosions, which is a way that all this manifested that I didn't expect to see because I just didn't know much about the underpinnings of the mortgage finance. But they just, there's some leeway in what you put as kind of a liability, but it's in some sense not really a serious liability, and you can just kind of put it off to the side on the balance sheet as a footnote or whatnot, and it comes down to a judgment call on whether that was legitimate to do so. And what a lot of banks did apparently was move their money market funds and conduits off their balance sheet as kind of these related parties or subsidiaries, and those conduits are what a lot of these mortgage securities flowed through. And now the world around, a lot of these entities are collapsing, and those parent banks are having to come in and bail them out, and suddenly the liability reappears on the balance sheet. And so it's a serious problem. Again, It's just a matter of taking a judgment call and stretching it too far when times are good. And, you know, investors stop questioning and regulators stop questioning and so forth. So, you know, we saw it in the last bubble as well, right? But with the tech stocks, with Enron, with WorldCom, all those guys.
Yep, we did pretty much the same thing. There was a gentleman named Hyman Minsky, who was an economist who's known for the study of asset bubbles and credit cycles. What's meant by a Minsky moment, and do you think we're there?
Yeah, that's exactly what we were talking about earlier with borrowers being overextended. And you're running into a point, basically, where income streams, real income streams, fail to be sufficient to service all the debt that has been accumulated. And anyone who's been watching the housing market or been participating as a first-time borrower knows exactly what that is and what that feels like intuitively. And but it kind of characterizes the whole economy, even beyond housing. You know, while housing is a huge component of it, the same willingness to extend debt at very low interest rates that characterized mergers and acquisitions, leveraged buyouts, just all these other aspects of the financial economy activity, they're basically based on just taking huge quantities of debt at low interest rates with borrowers who were okay with that for the time being, or investors who are okay with it. And there's just the income streams aren't there. I mean, from the borrowers in the housing market, you know, just the American people don't have that kind of money. The corporations for the mergers and acquisitions, leverage buyouts, their earnings, going into a recession, the earnings of most corporations are looking at turning south, not going up. So they're not going to be able to finance all that debt that was used to do the LBOs. So that's the Minsky moment, is when suddenly the investors who are powering the fixed income markets realize that they're never going to get their money back.
It's interesting that the lenders willingly participated in creating the system that allowed the borrower, who really could never pay this back, to borrow as much as they wanted. That is rather an amazing thing.
Yeah, and it seems to be good. It's funny. It seems to be good for both parties. The borrower thinks, wow, this is great. I can't believe this is happening. And the lender, you know, they think, wow, I can just flip this in the secondary market. And, it, you know, instead of waiting to collect my yield, I can collect it all up front. And so everybody's happy. So the dead bodies float to the surface.
You know, we interviewed a lender in front of a live seminar, and I happened to ask the question about stated income. And I said, the stated income, where did that number come from? And I thought she would say anything, but what she did, she said, oh, we just made it up. And I was really dumbfounded. I virtually had a 10-second silent period, which is not normal. I did not know what to say with that, because that's just out and out fraud. But she was almost proud of the fact that they were able to create home ownership for that person by simply dreaming up the number in arrears, so to speak.
Yeah, and it really disturbs me that how widespread those practices became, even when the borrower didn't know what was going on.
Well, you know, that's what's interesting. And Aaron, you got a point there. And I wonder, one of the interviews that we did was the Center for Responsible Lending. And they were pretty concerned about the consumer being taken advantage of. And I'm sure that that occurred in some cases. But I think there were a lot of other cases where somebody wanted in so bad that they were very knowledgeable about the entire process and what was being stated. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think, you know, there are culpable parties in all these different stakeholder groups. You know, a lot of borrowers really did know what was going on, and they abused the system. You know, Casey Sarin, the infamous "I am facing foreclosure" guy, who basically, I think it was got into 6 to 8 investment properties and with a total of $2.2 million in debt. And that was all driven by stated income borrowing. I mean, he really didn't have anything. So, and he was totally open about that, completely open about it. Because, you know, to him, despite what the rules were, everyone was accommodating it, and everyone was doing it. So, you know, he felt okay with it. But yeah, it's actually illegal, and that was a case where the borrower knew what they were doing. But it's a mix. You know, there definitely were shops where they were, you know, fibbing considerably on the lending documents in order to get someone approved so they could earn their commissions.
Oh, absolutely. The commission was the primary goal in every case, pretty much. Okay, some bigger questions. Do you feel that the dollar is about to be replaced as a world currency? And by about, I mean, let's say, give it a decade.
I think it'll be faster than a decade, and actually, in certain metrics, the dollar already has been replaced. There's more euro-denominated cash circulating than there is dollar-denominated. A lot of people don't realize this. The eurozone economy is bigger than the dollar zone economy, bigger than the U.S. economy. So those certainly give one pause. What the dollar has going for it has been the central banks and, to some extent, the private investment community, the high-powered money around the world has preferred to put its slush money in dollars, and that has meant the money market has meant treasury securities and so forth. The reason that might end quicker than one might otherwise think, quicker than a smooth evolution away, is because what's going on with in the financial economy is the fact that there's this strike in the dollar fixed income market. And I don't know if the gravy train will power up and just continue to some extent again along the tracks as it has. I suspect it certainly won't reach the glory that it reached last year with huge LBOs and so forth. But I do think that the evolution away from the dollar will happen quicker than has been assumed. And the reason that people have been assuming it was inevitable is not only because of the deficits in the U.S., but because the rest of the world economy is growing so rapidly. China and India and to some extent places like the Eurozone have become more formidable in both the real and financial aspects of the economy. So I think it's going to happen much faster than was assumed, and to a great extent, the correction will be good, but it doesn't mean it's going to be pleasant.
Do you see the possibility of returning to a Bretton Woods-type gold standard?
It may get bad enough that the central bankers kind of throw in the towel. I wouldn't put it beyond the realm of possibility. The thing is, even a gold standard can be abused, so I wouldn't immediately turn off my skepticism if that was done. But there are serious problems with using the fixed income market as kind of the counterbalance of humongous deficits, and I think we've seen that. You just get massive financial distortion, massive distortion in interest rates, which means that the most important price in the economy, which is the price of money, is not accurate, and that wreaks havoc in the entire economy the world round. So probably we would do better off with some sort of commodity-based standard. But they've pretty much thoroughly destroyed any popular notion of anything except fiat currency. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
We've got about 30 seconds. Do you see a recession having to cope with stagflation? Just quickly, yes or no, you think?
Yeah, I do think so. I think we're already seeing signs of it.
Okay. Aaron, mention your website for us one more time, please.
Yeah, it's ml-implode.com. And real quick, let me also say we're actually being sued by a lending company that is basically trying to get us to capitulate because of a whistleblower remark that appeared on our site. So anybody who supports the open information and what we're doing, please come check out. Please help support us.
Okay. Aaron, thank you very much. I've enjoyed the interviews a great deal.
Thank you guys for having me on.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.